listening to AM 770 KTTH Seattle and the live coverage of the coronavirus press briefing.
Because we stopped China. We had never done that before. You know, we had never closed our borders before, as I read. I don't know. Maybe that's not right. And Dr. Fauci had also said that was maybe the biggest moment, because we were stopping the source. We were stopping the infection. But we also stopped Europe very shortly thereafter. That was a big decision. That was not an easy decision either. I stopped them a long time before people started stopping anyway. So we stopped China. We stopped Europe. We stopped all of Europe. And then ultimately we stopped UK, Ireland. Yes. Please, in the back of the back, please.
Mr. President and the team, going back to hydroxychloroquine, how many clinical trial tests numerically would you like to see before you put a stamp of approval on it? Because there are clinical trials being taking place around the world right now.
Sure, please.
Is there a number? Yeah. How many cases would you like to see?
That is an FDA decision, and it really depends on a variety of factors. What I would like to see, a clinical trial that has a comparison to something that is comparable to what it means without the drug. I mean, I keep saying it. I say it all the time, and I'll say it again. It's a controlled trial that compares it to something meaningful. When that
other trials that you're watching taking place around the world right now?
Well, there are a number of trials going on, not only in the United States, but also in other parts of the world. You know, right now it's too early to make any determination, but I just want to get back to what I say all the time. The definitive way that you get an answer is by doing a randomized controlled clinical trial.
Mr. Connell, you're talking about the chloroquine? Is that what you're talking about? And specifically for the last question?
Yeah.
No, there are trials going on. But there are also trials going on. We're trying them on people that are now sick. That's a very important trial.
Experimented with around the world. So my question was really,
we're watching whatever happens around the world. We're watching those trials very closely. Yeah.
Mitch McConnell, yeah. He said that impeachment diverted the attention of the government. Do you think that in any way, this was happening and building at the same time, did it divert your attention or your team's attention or the vice president's attention?
Well, I don't like to think I did. I think I handled it very well, but I guess it probably did. I mean, I got impeached. I think, you know, I certainly devoted a little time to thinking about it, right? So, but think of it. It was a hoax. It was a total hoax. And when you think that I got impeached only because they had a majority in the House, they didn't get one Republican vote, 196 to nothing, not one Republican. I don't think it's ever happened. The Republicans stuck together, and they stuck together in the Senate, 52 to a half. So, you know, when you say that, yeah, I think it took a lot of I see them going and saying about speed. Well, they probably illegally impeached me in the sense that if you look at the FBI today with what happened, the horrible things, nobody cares about that now because all they're thinking about is the virus, and that's okay with me. But you look at the report that came out from IG Horowitz, it's disgraceful what went on. It's disgraceful. It's a total disgrace. They got caught in the act. But you know what? We won't talk about that now. Did it divert my attention? I think I'm getting A pluses for the way I handled myself during a phony impeachment, okay? It was a hoax. But certainly, I guess I thought of it. And I think I probably acted. I don't think I would have done any better had I not been impeached, okay? And I think that's a great tribute to something. Maybe it's a tribute to me. But I don't think I would have acted any differently, or I don't think I would have acted any faster. But the Democrats, their whole life, their whole being, their whole existence was to try and get me out of office any way they can, even if it was a phony deal. And it was a phony deal. And it turned out, and all you have to do is look today at the FBI reports. Take a look at what the FBI did. Take a look at the people. Take a look at Comey's report. 78 pages of total kill. Take a look at that. Take a look at the report on McCabe. Just read it, and you'll see how horrible it was. And you know what? I don't think this country is going to take it. You want to know the truth?
How did it take you out?
What guidance are you offering to Florida when it comes to the two Holland American cruise ships that are seeking to dock here.
Yeah, well, I'll be speaking. In fact, he has a call in to me. We'll be speaking to the governor, and we'll be speaking to him soon. But there's a case. We have two ships. There are people that are sick on the ship. And we don't want to be like they're going to be ghost ships. You know, people turn those ships away. There was a ship, as you know, in a certain part of Asia. And from port to port, nobody would take it. But in the meantime, you have people that are dying on the ship, or at least very sick, but they're dying on the ship. So I'm going to do what's right, not only for us, but for humanity. I mean, these are two big ships and they have a lot of very sick people. And I'll be speaking to the governor. Let's do just a couple of more back here. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I was hoping you could...
You ever run out of questions? It's the most unbelievable thing. You go through the room. But I have nothing else to do, so if you want us... I mean, if you want, should we keep it going, John? I think so.
Can you clarify something for me, please? Andrew Cuomo today said that the system that we have where governors are trying to get ventilators, it's like being on eBay with 50 other states bidding on a ventilator plus FEMA. And then you just said tonight...
He was complaining?
He said that when you have states competing for ventilators and medical care, it's like being on eBay with 50 other states bidding on a ventilator.
Well, he shouldn't be complaining because we gave him a lot of ventilators. And if you take a look at the chart, it's down. But I wish he got going a little bit sooner. But we gave him a lot of ventilators. And you know what? He has a lot of ventilators. The problem is with some people, no matter what you give, it's never enough. It's never enough. Like they'll say, how's Trump doing? And you're a Democrat. Some of them said really good. I'll tell you, Gavin Newsom from California, who's doing a good job, by the way, and others said really good. But, you know, generally your natural reflex, how's Trump doing? You ask that question to a Democrat. We don't like it. Oh, really? You don't like it? We're getting very high marks, but I'm not doing this for marks. I'm doing this to save lives. When John saw the numbers and when Jim saw those numbers, they're shocking numbers. You know, you're talking about deaths. Even at the low end, you were shocked when you see 100 and 120,000 and 200,000 people over potentially a very short period of time. I want to save lives. I'm not doing this for any other reason. I want to save lives. But the governor of New York's gotten, I think maybe you've probably gotten more than anybody. He's gotten 4 hospitals. He's gotten 4 medical tents. He's gotten a ship, the likes of which nobody's ever seen before, other than Los Angeles, which has the twin. We've done a lot. But many ventilators were sent to New York. And Mayor de Blasio, I'm getting along with Mayor de Blasio great, and I think he's very happy with the job we're doing, too. We're sending a lot of... Actually, Mayor de Blasio had an interesting request. He wanted people, and we're sending medical people. You know, a lot of the states aren't having a problem with ventilators. They're having a problem getting medical people. And we're sending a lot of people in, military, very talented people. Who didn't go?
Go ahead, and then I'll do you second.
Your response to that question earlier was that they shouldn't be doing that. If they need something, if they need them,
they shouldn't be doing what?
The governor shouldn't be competing with each other.
No, they shouldn't be competing, and they should call us. Wait, no, I don't want them to compete because all they're going to do is drive up the price. I don't want them to compete. They should be calling us, and we can work it so they get the ventilators and they get shipped directly. If they're competing, if they're calling, even if there's only 2 of them calling, they're going to just drive up the price because as nice as some of the people that do ventilators, they do want to make money, okay? So now, you know, New York had a chance to buy 16,000 ventilators. I guess they didn't take that option. That was in 2016. And that's a hard option to take because it's a lot of money. And who would ever think you need 16,000 ventilators? Who would ever think it? But this is a very unique time in life. And I think, you know, I'm dealing with New York and we're having a very good relationship. And you see what just happened in Central Park with the tents. I mean, we're having a really good relationship. Go ahead. You didn't get one of them.
Gavin Newsom, you mentioned Gavin Newsom and the job that
yes.
he's doing. I'm interested in what you think California has done to contribute to the suppression of the...
Well, they've done a good job, California. Now, let's see what happens because we could have a spike, doctors. I mean, you don't know. They could have a spike where all of a sudden it spikes upward. We had a couple like Louisiana. I think they're doing a really good job, but they had nothing. Now they had Mardi Gras, and then all of a sudden after Mardi Gras, which tells you about distancing, I guess. I mean, it's an example of what could happen, but they were like flawless. I was always surprised. I was looking at Louisiana, and I understand that state. I love that state. And I'm saying they're in great shape. Then they have Mardi Gras. It was a big success, tremendous success. And then all of a sudden, it went like a rocket ship. So that tells you about distancing, please.
Mr. Are you concerned, though, about the homeless population in California? Because I know California officials think that it could spread like wildfire. And obviously, there's a
say it again, louder.
There's a homelessness crisis in California.
Yeah,
they're obviously concerned that it could spread like wildfire in that community. So is there anything the administration...
Well, they're looking at that very strongly, and I know that it's it bothers Gavin. I don't know if it bothers Nancy Pelosi, but she's got it in her district at a very high level. They have to be very careful. They have a very big homeless population in an area which just a few years ago didn't have anybody in those areas. And they're living in the streets. And they're I know that some people in California are working on that very hard.
Mr. President, you spoke several times with Prime Minister Trudeau, President Macron, and at the end of last week, President Macron talked about an important initiative that you and him would launch. Any news on that?
No, we're talking about something that will be very positive for the world if we do it. We'll see if we do it or not. Well, I don't want to talk. It's a private thing, but it will become public if we decide to do it, but positive. Our relationship with the president, our relationship with France is, you know, I think extraordinary, very good, probably as good as it's ever been.
Mr. President,
get back to your comments about what could have happened and the actions that you took. Is there any fairness to the criticism that you may have lulled Americans into a false sense of security when you were saying things like it's going to go away?
Well, it is.
And that sort of thing. But
Jim, it's going away.
But when you were saying
it's going to go away, hopefully at the end of the month, and if not, it hopefully will be soon after that.
But hasn't your thinking on this evolved? You're taking it more seriously now.
I think from the beginning, my attitude was that we have to give this country... I know how bad it was. All you have to do is look at what was going on in China. It was devastation. And look at the numbers from China, those initial numbers coming out from China. But, you know, I read an article today, which was very interesting. They say, we wish President Trump would give more bad news. Give bad news. I'm not about bad news. I want to give people hope. I want to give people a feeling that we all have a chance. I mean, when you saw the numbers, and when John and all of you saw those numbers, and you're saying 120,000 people, you mean that's good? 100,000 dead people within a short period of time. I want to give people a feeling of hope. I could be very negative. I could say, wait a minute, those numbers are terrible. This is going to be horrible. This is a horrible thing. Hey, Jim.
Last month and said, okay, let's go to the beach. Let's go to the airport. Let's go down to Mardi Gras.
Well, there were a lot of people. There were a lot of people that could have said that. We didn't say that. Fortunately, I didn't say that. And that was an alternative. We talked about it. That was always an alternative. That's what I said. Let it rip. Let it ride. Do nothing. And we could have had 2.2 million dead people, more than that, because I didn't do that. And we did catch it early, and we stopped China really early, and we stopped Europe really early, because I saw what was happening. What happened is I stopped Italy, because Italy was really heavily infected. We started off with certain parts of Italy, then all of Italy, then we saw Spain. Then I said, stop Europe. Let's stop Europe. We have to stop them from coming here. Europe. I love Europe. But they were having problems. I don't think anybody did a better job than that, especially when you see the 2.2 million number. And I hope we're going to be substantially under the numbers that you're looking at on the minimum side. Then I think we will have, hey, look, it's still tremendous death.
You weren't just hoping that it would dissipate, that this would disappear.
I want to be positive. I don't want to be negative. I'm a positive person. Somebody said, oh, I wish you'd be more negative. They literally have that. It's in one of the wonderful newspapers today. I wish it'd be more negative. Well, this is really easy to be negative about, but I want to give people hope too. You know, I'm a cheerleader for the country. We're going through the worst thing that the country's probably ever seen. Look, we had the Civil War. We lost 600,000 people, right? Here's the thing. Had we not done anything, we would have lost many times that. But we did something, and so it's going to be hopefully way under that. But, you know, we lose more here potentially than you lose in world wars as a country. So there's nothing positive. There's nothing great about it. But I want to give people in this country hope. I think it's very important.
It wasn't going to be this severe when you were saying this was under control.
I thought it could be. I knew everything. I knew it could be horrible, and I knew it could be maybe good. Don't forget, at that time, people didn't know that much about it. Even the experts, we were talking about it. We didn't know where it was going. We saw China, but that was it. Maybe it would have stopped at China. We wish we could have killed it in China. But it didn't happen. It started spreading to Europe. It started spreading here. It started spreading all over. But, and I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying that we have an incredible thing. I think the people, our professionals, our military, our governors, our politicians, I think they've done an incredible job. I mean, with few exceptions, I think they've done an incredible job. But I don't want to be a negative person. It'd be so much easier for me to come up and say, we have bad news. We're going to lose 220,000 people, and it's going to happen over the next few weeks. And with that, I did start off by saying today, long before this question, I said, this is going to be a rough 2 or 3 weeks. This is going to be one of the roughest 2 or 3 weeks we've ever had in our country. We're going to lose thousands of people. When I see 28, 29 people from the governor of New Jersey, 29 people. When you see 173 people died in New York yesterday, or whatever the number was, I think it was more than that. When you see the kind of numbers that we're witnessing, we've never seen numbers like that. So it's easy to be negative. And then everybody could be negative, but I'm a cheerleader for our country, and I want them to do a great job so the number can be kept. And I've always said it, I want as few a number of people to die as possible, and that's all we're working on.
You don't like the question, but are you now taking responsibility?
I don't mind the question.
I don't mind your question.
I think it's not meant to be. Look, I know you well enough. So it's not meant to be a fair question, but it is a fair question. I think we've done a fantastic job. Okay, fine. I'll accept your word. Look, Jim, I think we've done a great job. We're going to see how it comes out. But when you look at minimal numbers of 120,000 people, when you look at it could have been 2.2 million people died and more if we did nothing, if we just did nothing. It would have gone up and it would have come down. As per your statement, it would have been confined. It would have been a similar time, maybe even less time. It would have been a violence like we've never seen in this country before. We had great professionals, great military, really great governors and politicians. I cannot say enough about what's going on. And as per what you said, I think we're way ahead of schedule in terms of numbers. I think, I hope. But if we can keep it under the minimum numbers, the country has, not me, the country has done a great job. But I think I've done a really good job of mobilizing. I think Mike Pence has been fantastic. I put him in charge of the task force. We have wonderful people on the task force, Jim. Wonderful people. This man was working literally. He had days where he didn't go to bed. He didn't go to sleep. He called. He went 24 hours and then started the next day. People don't know the job he did. I didn't even know he was that good of a manager, to be honest with you, Mike. Okay. And, you know, you never know that about somebody until they're tested under fire. But he saw it very early also. We both did. They saw it very early. They knew pretty soon. They probably knew sooner than anybody because that's what they study. That's what they do. Must be a depressing business, right? Must be a little bit depressing, but they've seen it all. Go ahead, Jeff.
Can I ask Dr. Fauci a question about a headline that's been running all day to get his perspective on it? There is a professor from MIT, Dr. Fauci, who suggests that coronavirus can be carried on droplets a distance of 27 feet. Do you buy into that? And if that might be the case, does that suggest that current social distancing guidelines may need to be extended?
This could really be terribly misleading, John. What it was looking at the distance that droplets fly by speaking, by coughing, by sneezing. So if you go way back and go, achoo, and go like that, you might get 27 feet. But so when you see somebody do that, get out of the way.
There are some people.
But that's not practical.
I know people that can do that.
That is not practical, John. I'm sorry, but I was disturbed by that report because that's misleading. That means that all of a sudden the six-foot thing doesn't work. That is a very, very robust, vigorous achoo sneeze. That's what that is. And that's not what we're talking about.
You want to keep going?
One more. I have one more.
Right, go ahead. How about over?
I've got a follow-up on the mask, sir, but first, you mentioned Franklin Graham earlier.
Yes.
Talking to him. As you know, his father, Billy Graham, was a trusted spiritual advisor and friend to many presidents. A lot of your predecessors in times of national emergency reached out to pastors and other spiritual counselors. Have you done that during this national emergency?
Well, I never say that, but Franklin Graham is somebody that's very special. I have many very special people, and very many special in the evangelical Christian community. You can talk rabbis. You can talk a lot of, you know, I have tremendous support from religious leaders. And Franklin Graham, I just spoke to him today for an extended period of time. I told him, what a fantastic job you're doing. And he does this. He loves doing it. He loves helping people. And he loves Jesus. That I can tell you. He loves Jesus. He's a great gentleman. Go ahead.
On the mask, sir. On the mask, maybe for the doctors.
The what?
On the masks. Is the reason why there's no CDC recommendation for the public to wear masks because they're meant to save and preserve the masks for the medical workers, or is it because the virus is not primarily transmitted through the air?
So there was a CDC does have recommendations on their website about masks that came to the task force several weeks ago about if you're infected, wearing a mask to protect others. And if you can't, you're working with someone who's sick and you have to be that worker in the household, because remember, we want people in the household being taken care of, that they should wear a mask. I know your question is broader than that, and it's just being considered by the task force now about whether that recommendation that already exists relevant to wearing masks should be altered in any way. So it's still under discussion.
And just about masks, you can get a mask, but you can also do, I mean, most people have scarves, and scarves are very good, and they can use a scarf. And we're only talking about a limited period of time. But, and it says in the recommendations you can substitute a scarf for a mask. So if people feel that, and I think, you know, some people disagree with a mask for various reasons, and some people don't. But you can wear a scarf, you can do the masks if it makes you feel better. We have no objection to it, and some people recommend it. Let's go back
to
the
Mr. President.
You people never get tired, look at you. And there's still good questions, actually.
Mr. President,
live coverage of the coronavirus task force press briefing here on AM 770 KTTH.
Still, you don't want to impose a travel ban for these areas. In Brazil, for instance, the President Bolsonaro, he keeps on being very active with groups. Aren't you afraid that what we're doing here can be threatened?
You mean you people? You mean you people?
Not here, but I mean the United States.
I mean, you're pretty spread out already. I don't have any more.
But you
I don't think we'll have press conferences anymore. But
I understand what.
We're very careful. I'm very careful personally, and.
But the travel ban. I mean, aren't you afraid?
We are looking at numerous countries as they get in a position. Brazil, as an example, you mentioned the president. Brazil had no problem until just a short time ago. And now they're starting to get inflamed. And yes, we are absolutely looking at a ban. There are two other countries you mentioned. Iran already has a ban. They had sort of an automatic ban. In addition to that, they have a ban. So we're looking at certain countries as they become hot.
So, Mr. President, you're starting a new 30 days now. What are your plans? Are you going to stay in the White House? Are you going to travel at all? Or are you sheltered?
I doubt I'll leave. I wanted to go to the opening of the hospital in New York, and my people couldn't even believe it that I said it, but I did. I wanted to go. They didn't want me to do it. The Secret Service didn't want me to do it for, you know, for reasons. I wanted to go to the boat sailing into New York Harbor, but the governor did a good job of that, and the mayor of New York. So, you know, I'd love to go out, but now I'll be in the White House, and it's sort of like nerve center, control center. And I think it's important, you know, look, you see what happened with Boris Johnson, you see what happened with others. I think it's important that I remain healthy. I really do. So for the most part, we're staying here. I've canceled many different events, and we'll be staying here for the most part.
Mr. President, Tom Friedman, the former director of the CDC, wrote an article the other day in which he said what's really needed here, and he understands the work that the task force is doing, is an incident commander.
to really take command of where everything is going and how things are being coordinated.
We have it.
That's something that could be useful in this particular instance.
We have it.
His name is Pete Gaynor. He's the administrator of FEMA. And when the president signed the National Emergency Declaration, he stood up the National Response Center at FEMA. And now I can tell you that when the White House Coronavirus Task Force meets, I'm at one end of the table, and Pete Gaynor and the whole FEMA team are by video conference at the other end of the table. And that's where, whether it be the air bridge that's literally bringing in millions of medical supplies from around the world, the thoughtful deployment of those supplies to hospitals, particularly with regard to ventilators. We're working very closely. HHS is fully integrated at FEMA now. But because of the president's decision to stand up FEMA in the lead, we have a coronavirus task force at the White House that's bringing the president the very best health experts and recommendations from every agency. But all the implementation, as we tell governors literally every day, is happening through FEMA. It's going down to the states through FEMA, and state requests are coming up through regional administrators for FEMA and back to the White House for consideration.
At the same time, we have 4,000 ventilators that are parked in a warehouse in New Jersey. No, but that was the case. We also have...
We moved them out.
I understand.
They had them a long time ago, but they didn't need it.
But the question is, this happened. We also have people not knowing about the new Abbott testing facility, or testing system. If there were an incident commander who was in charge of all of that and getting the word out, would that be a useful thing?
Nobody knew about the new Abbott. It was just brought to life 2 weeks ago. They just came up with it.
That's right.
It was an invention that we just... So nobody knew about it. Nobody knew you could even do it. They did an incredible job. Their scientists came up with the idea a week and a half ago. I showed it to you yesterday in a box. I don't think you could do much better than that.
If I may, Mr. President, I think your point's well taken. The Abbott Laboratories point of contact test was approved Friday. The president announced it in the Rose Garden on Sunday.
Should have done it.
We're socializing that all across the country, to every governor, to laboratories elsewhere. And I have to tell you, that this team that the president has assembled, the advisors on the White House Coronavirus Task Force, and then this team at FEMA, whether it be HHS Deputy Secretary Bob Cadlick, who's coordinating all supplies, whether it be Admiral Joie, who is literally working with every state on a county-by-county basis to deploy testing, is impressive. And I think it's given great encouragement to governors. President and I spoke to governors in all the states and territories again yesterday, because governors, I can tell you from my own experience as a governor, in Indiana, we had tornadoes and flooding. Governors know how to deal with FEMA. And as soon as the president stood up FEMA, declared that national emergency, what I'll call a certain amount of muscle memory kicked in states around the country. And we're really seeing a tremendous efficiency and communication, and that's how we're going to go forward. Again, the president's vision here is FEMA's vision, which is in response to a health crisis. It's locally executed, state managed, federally supported. And I have to tell you, we're seeing that whole process spinning up every day. And I hope Americans looking on are encouraged by that system. And I know they're hearing from governors around the country about the flow of resources and testing and supplies, and we'll continue to keep that. What you call an incident command, what we call the Federal Emergency Management Agency, working 24/7.
And I have to say this. I've had, in the last less than a week, three governors call up that truly have disliked me over the years, even before I decided to run for president. And they said, I have to tell you, you've done a great job. You and your team have done a great job. These are three governors, respected, very respected in two cases. And they said, like or not like, you and your team have done an incredible job. And I think they have. I think they've done an incredible job. Go ahead, please.
Mr. President, thanks so much. My first question is on modeling. Was there any kind of White House modeling based on whether or not there would be a national lockdown or some sort of guidance to every single state that they needed to have lockdowns?
So all of the modelers who presented did, I mean, I just want to thank them again because they assembled from around the globe very quickly about 2 or 3 weeks ago to before we announced the first 15 days to show all the implications of closing the schools, having people stay in their homes. And that's how it was modeled. Stay in your homes, social distancing of 6 feet. So no one actually termed it a lockdown, as far as I remember. It was more about staying in your home. And I think the difference was, and these weren't in the models, and I think when you talk about could we have known something different, you know, I think all of us, I mean, I was overseas when this happened in Africa. And I think when you looked at the China data originally and you said, oh, well, there's 80 million people or 20 million people in Wuhan and 80 million people in Hubei, and they come up with a number of 50,000, you start thinking of this more like SARS than you do this kind of global pandemic. I mean, I'll just be frank. That when I looked at it, I was like, oh, well, this is not, you know, if as close as those quarters are, you know. So I think the medical community interpreted the Chinese data as that this was serious, but smaller than anyone expected, because I think probably we were missing a significant amount of the data now that when we see what happened to Italy and we see what happened to Spain. And so what was modeled is not a lockdown. Two countries did remove people from homes that were positive and put them in separate spaces. That also wasn't modeled, but it could be modeled. And so we could go back and ask the modelers about lockdown versus not lockdown, but what they modeled was people staying at home.
I guess what I was asking is, for best case scenario, since it says best case scenario is 100,000 people, I know you're trying to get that number even lower, but is best case scenario every state basically having lockdown behavior, not maybe actual lockdowns, but basically everyone staying in their homes? So if that's true, why not tell every state to do that?
It's everybody social distancing by 6 feet when they're outside. And that is probably absolutely the key more than anything else, is if you're never within 6 feet of any single individual, then you've controlled the virus. There are different methods to get you to that point. And I think what I've heard from our president and our vice president is they trust the American people to understand that they can be outside, take walks, be 6 feet away from anyone else, and be in their homes. And we trust them to do that without having to lock down.
And then, Mr. President, a question on ventilators.
I just want to add, I think the one thing nobody really knew about this virus was how contagious it was. It's so incredibly contagious, and nobody knew that. This is like, I don't know that anybody's ever seen anything like this. Normally, you'd have to get close and touch, and this, a lot of things have to happen. This is just like, it's truly invisible and so contagious. And I don't think any doctor knew it at the time. I don't think anybody could have known it. People have not seen anything like this.
Yeah, so a question about ventilators. You talked about the fact that you don't want to see states bidding against each other. The governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, said that there should be a federal system where the federal government sets the price, the federal government distributes the ventilators. Why not have that kind of system? Why have this?
Well, essentially we do. We've distributed thousands of ventilators, and we have now thousands of ventilators, and we're buying them at a good price, and we're actually making them by the thousands. We're making them. You saw yesterday where Ford is going to have a tremendous number. They're looking to make 100,000 ventilators. Ford has been great. General Electric Healthcare has been great. General Motors has come a long way. I have to be honest. They're working very hard. We're making thousands and thousands of ventilators. You know, at the end of this, and there will be, don't say I'm optimistic, because I don't want to, you know, I wouldn't want to do that. But I am optimistic. I'm a very optimistic person. Let me tell you, we will have thousands of ventilators. And what I want to do is make sure that we always have plenty for the future. But then we want to help Italy and France and other countries that you don't even know about yet. with all of the problems they have, because ventilators are very tough to come by. They're very hard to make. They're very complicated. They're very expensive. Yeah, please.
Is Governor Cuomo mistaken?
You could go ahead.
Is Governor Cuomo mistaken when he's saying?
Well, I don't know. You know, I can't take your interpretation of what he said. I don't know what he said. I think he's been reasonably generous, considering he's a Democrat, and I think he'd like to run for president. So I think he's been pretty generous under those circumstances. But he's been very generous to me. Look, I got him ships. I got him hospitals. I got him a lot of things that he never thought he had pay dirt. OK. And I've been very generous on ventilators. If you look, they had 2,000 and 4,000. They had thousands of ventilators in his warehouse, in their warehouse, waiting to be picked up. They never picked them up. So I'd have to hear it from him face to face. Do you want to add? How about one more and we'll see you tomorrow. Is that okay? Don't say that I cut it short. They'll say he... That's right. It could be almost tomorrow. But you know what? In the meantime, I'm sure people are enjoying it. No, I will say this. It's an incredibly dark topic, an incredibly horrible topic, and it's incredibly interesting. That's why everybody is... they're going crazy. They can't get enough of it, and they want to be careful. And I guess they're studying it for themselves. They're studying if they get it. A lot of people have it. A lot of people are positive, and they hope for the best. Because when this gets the wrong person, meaning a person that qualifies, generally speaking, under the list, it is ravaging. It is horrible. Go ahead. How about you in the back?
Thank you. Is there any data to suggest that you're going to see a second wave at the point at which these stay-at-home orders, these lockdowns?
Well, if we do see a second wave, because I've heard Dr. Fauci answer this question, if we do, we're going to be, I think, very well prepared. And the second wave won't be like the first wave. And with that, I better let him give you a little bit more to that answer, because I don't want to have him upset with me and say, I wish you would have answered that question. Come on, doctor.
So when you talk about second wave, I think you really are talking about two different things that are a little bit different. So, for example, after the 30 days, if we get the mitigation that we hope will get us to the suppression that Dr. Birx was talking about, there's a danger, if we don't continue to maintain that, that we have a resurgence right within the current outbreak. That's sort of a second wave, but it really is an exacerbation of the current wave. We hope that doesn't happen, and that's why we're really pushing, and why I was so emphatic about making sure we abide by those mitigation strategies. The other aspect of a second wave is something that's just the nature of a virus that's, as the president said, highly transmissible and is going to be circulating in other parts of the world as we're going down, which I think we will, and I feel certain that we will. Then we have to worry about the next season. And as was just mentioned, that's when you use the experience that you have, the interventions that you've developed, and hopefully a vaccine that you'll be able to deploy as quickly as you possibly can. That's that second wave that really is more seasonal than an exacerbation of something that you pull back on.
Dr. Fauci,
a lot of very positive things are happening with the therapeutics and drugs of different kinds and the vaccines. I think a lot of very positive things are happening. Okay, one more. Please, go ahead.
So under some of the worst-case scenarios, there is a real scarcity problem if you've given out, say, 7,000 ventilators and we've got 10,000 around. So I'm just curious, who signs off on those life-and-death decisions before GM and Ford ramp up?
Well, I would say Mike Pence, myself, the head of FEMA, some of our generals that are working that are doing an unbelievable... You know, we have generals that are working that are unbelievable talents, unbelievable leaders, and it'll go through one of three or four people if it comes down to that, and I hope it doesn't come down to that, because I think we're very well equipped. It's an honor to be here tonight. I appreciate it. I appreciate your interest. I think there is a great interest in it. And we'll see you tomorrow.
That was President Trump live with his coronavirus press briefing. The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington State, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. Don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. More coverage of the coronavirus crisis and how it impacts you when we return on the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rancher. Don't forget, I'm going to be on Tucker Carlson later today talking about the fact that Francisco Calderon, 75 convictions, gets released from jail. All because of this coronavirus policy coming from the State Department of Corrections, or excuse me, the King County Department of Corrections. We'll be talking about that lawlessness tonight on the Tucker Carlson Show. You can watch it at 9:30 p.m. tonight on Fox News. I believe that's when it's going to air. And if you are not around at that time, don't forget, we post all of this on our Facebook page, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow, as well as twitter.com/JasonRants. So there's some confusion right now as to the mask situation. Should you be wearing masks? If you're going outside and you're going for a walk, if you're walking your dog, trying to socially distance yourself, but knowing that it's serious, knowing that there's a stay-at-home order, should you be wearing a mask? Well, turns out, probably not. That's still the guidance. It's the guidance coming from the Surgeon General, and it's the guidance coming from Dr. Anthony Fauci. Right now, there is a concern that a lot of you guys are taking on masks that you don't actually need to wear, which keeps masks away from healthcare workers. They're in positions where they actually need to wear it. Here's Dr. Fauci on CNN.
You don't want to take masks away from the healthcare providers who are in a real and present danger of getting infected. That would be the worst thing we do. If we have them covered, then you could look back and say, maybe we need to broaden this.
Maybe you need to broaden this. Maybe if we had a surplus of these masks, you would be able to wear them when you're out there going for a walk with your dog. But we're not there yet.
But when we get in a situation where we have enough masks, I believe there will be some very serious consideration about more broadening this recommendation of using masks. We're not there yet, but I think we're close to coming to some determination.
And it's important to understand what the masks can actually do, because remember, we heard locally from our public health experts saying a mask is pretty much useless, but that was about a month and a half ago. So what about now?
Because if, in fact, a person who may or may not be infected wants to prevent infecting someone else, one of the best ways to do that is with a mask. So perhaps that's the way to go. And again, I say, Jim, that's under very active consideration. We'll be discussing it today, this afternoon, at the task force meeting.
So obviously we covered the task force meeting and we got more guidance on that. But it's important to understand, if all you're doing, let's say you're someone who's hunkered down, you're taking the stay-at-home order seriously, and the only time you're going outside is to walk your dog. And let's say you live in Chehalis. Let's say you live in Marysville and you're in a residential neighborhood. You're going for a walk and you're only going for a walk for about 10 minutes just to take in some of that sunlight. We actually had a good day of weather today. We had some good weather over the weekend. The dog's been trying to get outside. If you're just going for a 10-minute walk and you're not really going to bump into anyone, because normally on your walks you don't bump into anyone, you don't need to wear a mask. You don't need to wear a mask. That mask is not going to do anything for you. That's what I'm getting from these health experts. Now, if you're someone who's sick, if you're someone who's showing symptoms, and for whatever reason you can't completely hunker down, then okay, you wear a mask. But if you're otherwise healthy, and you're staying at home, and you're spending limited time outdoors, you don't need a mask. I don't need a mask. I don't need a mask, and I'm technically at risk of a higher mortality rate because I have asthma. I'm still young. I'm still relatively healthy, so it's not really that big of a deal. But it is a possibility that I get sicker than normal if I were to get COVID-19, if I was to get the Chinese virus. But I'm not wearing a mask because I'm not at risk right now. The only time I'm spending out of my house is coming to the office where we're spraying everything down and I have virtually no face-to-face contact with anyone. But there are people who are coming face-to-face with people who actually have coronavirus. These are healthcare professionals. They're the ones who need the masks, not you. So keep that in mind as we have these conversations. Now, could that start to change as a means to cut down on the rate of transmitting the coronavirus? Yes, it could. You just heard from Dr. Fauci, but right now we're not there. Now, at the same time, what we do know is that there are still hospitals out there, healthcare centers, that don't have an ample supply of these masks. And so we've been hearing from companies all across the country, including right here at home, that have decided to completely change their manufacturing units and put out these gowns and put out these gloves and put out these masks. Well, we just learned that a state prison textiles factory is also now putting out protective gowns and masks for those who are working with coronavirus patients. The Coyote Ridge Correction Center, they're producing 2,000 garments a week right now. But now, they've decided to shift over, and they're making 500 protective gowns daily. A textile unit supervisor, Robert Hewitt, says this is all to help the community.
It's kind of a nice feeling to be able to give back, and especially in this the time of need.
So they hope to hit 2,100 per day. It's going to take some time, but Brian Burke, who's a worker, says, hey, you know what? My daughter's going to be proud of the work that I'm doing here.
My daughter, she was extremely pleased with that. She's like, you know, there's so many people out here that are in dire emergency for it. The fact that you have a part of this, you should be proud of yourself.
And so he is proud of himself. The State Emergency Operations Center asked the DOC for help, and they got it. So now they're even expanding the program to other prisons. They've got people who are willing to do work. Just because you are working at a prison doesn't mean that you're solely about the prisoners, right? You want to give back to your community. And just because you're an actual prisoner yourself doesn't mean you don't care about the community. At one point, you certainly didn't, and maybe that's changing. I would love to see us put to work a whole bunch of prisoners to help some of this stuff, so long as they're qualified and can actually do the work. And I love that we're changing things up at this textile factory at this Coyote Ridge Correction Center, because it's actually helping. And Shelley says he wants everyone to pitch in.
We want to help. We want to give back. And there's more people out here in the shop that want to help out and make gowns as well. So I'm hoping in the future we can have this whole shop making gowns.
Good for him. Good for him. Because you know what? The truth of the matter is there are a lot of us who aren't doing anything. Some of us are clearly doing some stuff, right? Some of it's small. Some of it's big. Some of it is not available to us because of our own economic situations. Some of us who can afford it are buying gift cards from small businesses, from restaurants, from barbershops. Some of us are going to tuliptown.com, and for like $15-16, you're buying a bouquet of tulips that end up getting donated to hospital workers. Some of us are going to joechocolateco.com to purchase for $54 a huge box of chocolate infused with coffee to send to hospitals of your choice. And others are, we talked about the seamstress yesterday from Auburn, who is a professional seamstress. She is making, for the Pierce County Sheriff's Department, masks for them. People are giving back in a whole bunch of ways, and I love that. And we're going to continue to shine a spotlight on those stories. Because even through all of the nastiness that we see online and on MSNBC and CNN, even through all the negative stories, the scary stories, the anxiety-inducing stories about the mortality rate with COVID-19, there's still a lot of positive stuff going on. And so kudos to the people who are stepping up in whatever way that they can. And kudos to anyone who wants to, but right now can't. Because in a lot of ways, sometimes it is the thought that counts. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We got more coming up right here on AM 770 KTTA.